Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Normally on Friday, we have our call-in Fridays. And today is an unusual day because we have a guest that I'm going to be interviewing. Mr. Carl Grossman is with us. And without further ado, because we only have an hour, welcome to the show, Carl. Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
This is such a beautiful, I'm so grateful that you get to join us today because there's so much on my mind about this. First, let me introduce Carl for those of our listeners who don't know who he is. Carl is a full professor at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. And he has been an investigative reporter for over 45 years and has written many excellent articles on, really, I think, activism and exposing the lies of the nuclear industry and the leading causes of it. And I add my own little thing. Carl was the man, the very reason that I actively got engaged and moved away from my computer and started figuring out what I could do, because I heard him on Helen Caldicott's radio show right after Fukushima happened. And they were talking about it, and he said, look, this is so grave. Every person listening to this radio show needs to figure out what they can do. And we have been trained in our culture to tell ourselves no, and we need to start saying yes. I forget his exact words, but he said something like, listen to your gut. If your gut tells you you need to be doing something, go do it. So that's what I did, and this is 3 years later. Here I am. Hi, Carl.
Well, I'm so thrilled to hear that, to inspire somebody like yourself. It's just the most heartwarming thing I've heard all week.
Oh, good. Well, I have to say, when I found out about Fukushima, when I first heard about it, I believed the president when he said everything was fine, just fine. Then I had a nightmare in 2012 and realized, oh my gosh, I went to the internet and discovered, oh my gosh, this place is raging. And since I heard you, I can honestly say it is like unpeeling an onion of deceit and murder, because I think that the nuclear people are murderers. I just read on Wednesday from the World Health Organization webpage, the World Nuclear Association. They basically said nobody has died in Fukushima and that people are dying from the trauma of the evacuation, and that people are beginning to understand that exposure to radiation is just not that harmful. I mean, the lies and I actually identified who the person was at the head of the helm there. Her name is, this is a weird name, and I'm dying to ask you this ever since Wednesday, if you've heard of her, Agneta Rising. Do you know who she is?
No, I've not heard of that nuclear Pinocchio, but her line is That's the pitch of the nuclear establishment. I mean, they make the tobacco industry look like pikers. I mean, and that's going pretty far with the cigarette companies saying, and doctor, remember when I was a kid, advertisements about more doctors like to smoke this brand of cigarette or that brand of cigarette. And that was a nightmare in and of itself. The promotion of tobacco causing addiction through nicotine of millions and millions of people and so many deaths. And along with it now comes, it's hard to say it's, maybe I shouldn't compare the two. It's like comparing cancer and heart disease. But now you have these liars for hire of the nuclear establishment claiming that nuclear is fine. In fact, there's a term they use called radiation hormesis.
That's
and
right.
Listeners might want to look that up on the internet, on Google, or radiation, or look up hormesis, H-O-R-M-E-S-I-S, and that's this line of the nuclear industry, nuclear establishment within government, that actually radiation exercises the immune system, and it's a helpful thing. I mean, these people should be judged on the basis of the principles set out in the Nuremberg Tribunal. These people are, and their companies and their agencies, their government agencies, are guilty of killing on a mass scale. It's just outrageous.
Excuse me for jumping in here, but they're also responsible for brainwashing the leaders around the world that nuclear is okay. That's
not only the leaders, but the people, the populace, and. They've moved into media through the years. So, for example, the Coke and Pepsi of nuclear power historically have been General Electric and Westinghouse. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, for years, here was GE owning NBC. And I've written all kind of pieces about what that resulted in. And Westinghouse, for years, owning CBS. Not only a direct push into media, but my first book on this, Cover Up What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, which in fact can now be downloaded for free from my website, carlgrossman.com. I spent pages and pages presenting the interlocking boards of directorates, people who are involved in the nuclear industry, and also on the boards of media companies. I mean, it's been a huge brainwashing effort, and it would make Goebbels, the propaganda minister for the Nazis, smile in his grave as to what the nuclear industry and the nuclear establishment have done. Utterly outrageous. And just let me add a footnote in terms of Fukushima. Most people are not aware, because media have not reported this to any extent, that shortly before, well, in 2009, the couple of years before the Fukushima catastrophe began, because it's ongoing, two Japanese companies took over the nuclear operations of GE and Westinghouse. Toshiba partnered with, well, it took over Westinghouse's nuclear operations, so it's now Toshiba Westinghouse, and Hitachi partnered with General Electric in its nuclear operations. So now the Coke and Pepsi of nuclear power are Japanese brands, which is another reason, besides TEPCO, this odorous, this outrageous Japanese utility, and the nuclear mafia, they call it in Japan, within the Japanese government. Now you have the Coke and the traditional Coke and Pepsi of nuclear power, Japanese brands. Thus, the Prime Minister of Japan has been very busy in recent times trying to sell nuclear power plants elsewhere to other countries. The spread, the disasters, the tragedies, the deaths that all result from nuclear power.
You know, Carl, what really is astounding, we just saw this multi-billion dollar deal go down in England, right? And that's again, like you said, the Coke and Pepsi, it was GE. What they're denying, this is the incomprehensible thing for me, because we've had 70 years of their lies. Japan's population is dropping off the charts. It's going backwards. And that is most likely a direct result of bombardment with nuclear materials. And it's incomprehensible to me that every world government, I mean, it is Dr. John Goffman, you know, when I read Dr. John Goffman's book, when he talked about that, he studied the Japanese people after the government threw away all their documents on the women and children when they realized it was very bad for that population. He said after 20 years, he realized that the government underreports the negative effects of radiation by 90% and immediately denies radiation causes harm. Every government, this is the astounding thing, there is not one government agency anywhere in the world that acknowledges that nuclear is bad. They all deny radiation causes harm. They all underreport the negative. And in fact, to this day, like this morning, right before we got on the air, I mentioned to you about this article, and it is in the Washington Post. I read it on the Googles this morning. It's called Brain Cancer Replaces Leukemia as the Leading Cause of Cancer Deaths in Kids. We know that this is a direct result. These increases in cancer and leukemias are a direct result from radiation exposure.
Well, it's a leading cause. There's a toxic stew that we've been forced to sit in. Toxic chemicals, radioactivity, synergy. And Rachel Carson was very strong on this, relating, this is back in the early 60s, she understood that you put radioactivity and toxic chemicals, the pesticides, and these horrible things that have been put in food, that's in our water and so forth. You put it together and two with two don't equal four, they equal much more because of a synergy. I mean, I've written, Google my name and put in cancer, that horrible, horrible word, and you'll see article after article by me.
I've read many, good, many, many.
A good part of my, I did a book called The Poison Conspiracy, charging that those who are supposed to protect us don't at virtually every level from these people who are producing and spreading poisons on the planet, and cancer. In fact, in the book The Poison Conspiracy, there's a whole chapter on admitted causes of cancer, where I cite various government. In the late 1970s, you mentioned government agencies. There was a little bit of a not telling the truth. There was a little bit of a change in that during the Carter administration. And he put together a number of task forces and so forth on cancer. And I actually reprint as facsimiles their summaries, their conclusions. And that essentially the conclusion is that cancer is a largely environmental disease, that most cancers are caused by pollution. I mean, some of it is voluntary, people smoking, but much of it is not voluntary at all. It's these poisons that have been spread into our environment and into our body, and these are the prime causes of cancer. It's basically an environmental disease. Cancer was the number eight killer in this country back in 1900, number eight, way down on the list. And these days, it's coupled with heart disease as the two big killers. Now, the poisoners, the nuclear industry and nuclear establishment and the chemical companies, they say, well, no, it has to do with lifestyle and diet and genetic disposition. Well, in part, cancer has to do with that. And then they'll also say that people are living longer and they got to die of something, so they're dying of cancer. But that doesn't explain the epidemic of cancer that we're seeing. I mean, who listening to this doesn't know someone who has cancer or has died from cancer? It's endemic. It's so widespread. And when you get to something like brain cancer, as this leading childhood cancer now beyond leukemia, which is blood cancer. This is children. This isn't people living longer. This is an epidemic of cancer among young people. And the reason, it's not eating sour cream. It's not because you didn't do a good number of push-ups in the morning. It has to do with the poison that's been put into our environment. And let me stress this, unnecessarily. I mean, there's some risks in life we all take. We jump into our car. We drive on the interstate, and people are going fast, and they're cutting in, and they're speeding, and there's always a certain risk. Jump on an airplane, and there's a certain risk, but the risk that we're being put through is totally unnecessary. There is no need for these toxic chemicals. There's no need for nuclear poisons. I mean, let me just jump in terms of toxic chemicals. For years, the Monsanto company produced polychlorinated biphenyls, which it knew, in fact, were carcinogenic for years, and claimed that there's no alternative than to use polychlorinated biphenyls if we want to have an industrial society, needed as insulating fluid and so forth and so on. Well, finally, after the Environmental Protection Agency was created in the 70s, and after what was called the Yusho incident in Japan, where several people were poisoned and 1,000 got very ill because some PCBs getting into to rice oil, PCBs were banned, and now they're not produced anymore here in this country. Fine, and what's been used as the substitute for PCBs? Mineral oil, nothing space age, nothing fancy. It turned out that PCBs were never necessary. Another substance could have been used all along, which was not carcinogenic, which wouldn't have caused the cancers that the PCBs have caused. Jumping to energy, to nuclear energy, I mean, we're really, it's an important point we're at now in terms of nuclear power, because it's clear that safe, green, renewable energy technologies are here today, and there's no need for nuclear. I mean, symbolic of this, I think, is just this this summer, the solar impulse, the solar-powered airplane flying around the world. The reports, and I have a bunch of them in front of me, about now safe, green, renewable energy is less expensive. Here's one right here. Climate Action, you can get this on the web. Investment. The International Energy Agency has released a report showing that investment in new renewables has outpaced investment in the traditional energy sources, coal, oil, gas, and nuclear for the first time. Here's a piece, and this is on a financial page. America has seen 11 consecutive quarters with more than 1 gigawatt of solar photovoltaic PV photovoltaics installed. I mean, if you go to, speaking of the internet, if listeners might want to go to the webpage of it's a wonderful organization, the Solutions Project. The Solutions Project, a group which let me give the URL: http://thesolutionsproject.org. And it was founded by a bunch of important figures, including Mark Jacobson, who is a professor at Stanford. The actor Mark Ruffalo was a co-founder. In any case, what it's been promoting and pushing is 100% renewable energy. And in other words, what the Solutions Project is saying is that it's feasible. It's all here today. We can have energy we can live with. We can produce all the energy we need with safe, green, renewable energy, like particularly solar, wind power. And you can go tidal power, you can go wave power, you can go on and on. It's a bonanza, it's a windfall of safe green power that we have now available to us, rendering nuclear power as well as coal and oil, which cause climate change and are no good too, and gas. This fracking situation is outrageous. What that is doing in the production of gas and oil to the water around the nation, indeed around the world, as it's being pushed around the world. So there's a green path that can be taken, and the advances are enormous. Well, when I first started in that book, Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, I wrote it after the Three Mile Island accident, convinced me that catastrophic accidents, nuclear plant accidents, were going to be happening with some regularity. And I sat down, spent a year, wrote that book. And as I say, just go to www.carlgrossman, one word, call with a K, grossman.com. Hit the button which says books, and you can get a download of that, courtesy of the publisher, for free. But when I wrote that book, solar power was, well, in terms of efficiency, the relationship between sunlight and how much wattage is produced, it was in the single digits.
Right.
Just last week, a company called Insolite, a new startup company, has developed solar photovoltaic panels with 36% efficiency. I mean, the best that has been developed for space use has been 25% efficiency, and the SunPower company last year began producing panels with 24% efficiency, but now we see 36% efficiency. What that means is that you need far less
panels.
Space,
right.
For the panels, and really this is just the beginnings of efficiency in terms of wind power. It's just amazing. I mean, the Europeans have moved into offshore wind, which is really appropriate for areas which are well-settled, densely populated, including where I live here. I live on Long Island in New York, and we're 100 miles from Manhattan, but there's a lot of people who live on Long Island, millions of people. Count Brooklyn and Queens, 8 million people. So what's being developed off Long Island? Offshore wind. In fact, the first offshore wind farm in the U.S. is to be completed in coming weeks. It's off eastern Long Island. It's near a place called Block Island. And one of the towns on Long Island, East Hampton, recently announced that it's going to go 100% renewable by, you know, not 20 years from now, 10 years from now, 4 years from now, by 2020. And in fact, any town in America, any state in America, with a different mix. Some would be heavy on offshore wind, some onshore wind, some solar, some tidal power, some wave power, some biomass. And so combined with energy efficiency, the world, period, could go 100% renewable. Here's an article that's on the Solutions Project talking about over 130 countries could go, 139 countries could be 100% renewable in coming years. And in any case, these toxic substances, these toxic processes that are killing people, and cancer is the big form of death from this monkey wrench thrown into nature. This is not like getting on an airplane. It is not like getting into a car and going on the interstate. Risks that you kind of have to take. These are risks we do not need to take.
No. And on top of that, I mean, it's almost as if they know that we don't need to take the risk, but it's as if, I mean, really, all of these renewable energies have really been suppressed by, as you say, the Coca-Cola and Pepsi of, you know, I mean, there's been lots of money out there. I know that at my own university here, University of Oregon, I met a girl who told me that her professors, in fact, two students have argued with me that I am grossly misinformed, that nuclear is just not that harmful. Now, this is what they're getting at an education at a university level. They are being trained and groomed to accept nuclear death. And that is the most. Now, let me ask you this. Now, I just opened up this page to the, I've never actually even heard of this, and thank you for sharing it with me, the Solutions Project.
Yes.
How is it that these, this is a really awesome page, and I do suggest everybody go there because it really does give us a lot. Is it out of the Stanford University, or is it just a group of people who are doing it? Do you know these people?
Oh, no, it's a major effort. It's a major effort to do 100% renewable in this country and around the world.
Yes, but as I look at this,
Mark Jacobson, who was an absolute giant, but they're getting funding from terrific foundations, the Park Foundation, the Musk Foundation, so they got some bucks to do what needs to be done in terms of trying to educate people. Oh, and also to, they're just not sitting there doing reports. The organization, the Solutions Project, has just began. I mean, it just began something called the Fighter Fund. Let me just describe it. A new grant-making program for community-based groups on the front lines of the fight for clean energy and climate justice. Thus, if where you're speaking from in Eugene, which has to be one of the most wonderful cities in the entire world. I love Eugene, Oregon.
Environmental groups in Eugene,
including environmental groups at the university, and I've spoken at the University of Oregon and Eugene, and I know that there's a very active environmental movement. You can, I think, get help from the Fighter Fund and get involved with the Solutions Project. I mean, years ago, the saying was active today or radioactive tomorrow. Well, people have been active, and the nightmarish dream of 1,000 nuclear plants that Richard Nixon spoke about for the United States in the year 2000, that hasn't come to pass. We're less than 100, and they've been closing down one after another of these old, decrepit plants, just can hardly function at all. Still, we've gotten radioactive today all around the world. These plants have, and these disasters, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, have caused enormous death. In fact, when people go to my website, you'll see a video. I have a syndicated television show called Enviro Close Up with Carl Grossman, and I interview. And you can just click on it's right on the actual home page of the website. An interview with Dr. Jeanette Sherman, and she was the editor of such an important book just done a few years ago by a group of European scientists led by Dr. Alexei Yablokov, who actually is the Rachel Carson of Russia. And they, on the basis of data now available, conclude that the death toll just so far from the 1986 Chernobyl accident is 985,000. Many of those hundreds of thousands, many of those deaths occurred in Russia, in Belarus, and in the Ukraine, where the Chernobyl plant is still sitting there with some other plants next to it, which are still outrageously running. But in any case, some of that death involved wherever the fallout from Chernobyl went. And that was one nuclear plant which exploded. Here in Fukushima, now 5 years ago, you had three, and I'm sure everybody has seen those images on television of those plants exploding. And the fallout from those nuclear plants into the atmosphere, and particularly into the Pacific Ocean and moving in the ocean and getting concentrated in the ocean, because with with radioactivity getting on, well, vegetation, for example. Little fish eat the vegetation, bigger fish eat the smaller fish, and the next thing you know, you're having some sushi in Portland. And, well,
that's right.
I wouldn't want to have some sushi in Portland these days, honestly.
I stopped eating fish completely. I've stopped.
Well, it's a horror, but, I mean, when we deal with these issues, there's really, you know, we can not eat fish. We can try to, you know, be in terms of the Pacific, the Atlantic. I'm here on the East Coast, so I'm a little luckier. But, I mean, there's nowhere to hide. I love snorkeling, absolutely love snorkeling. We've gone through the years of the Caribbean. But in the last several years, you go snorkeling now in the Caribbean. I'm talking about the prime places for snorkeling and seeing life, technicolor life underwater. The coral reefs have been bleached to snow white.
Let me ask you some questions about this project, because one of my pet peeves is that the people who say they are providing us alternative energy and giving us new ideas, blah, 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 all that other stuff, like this team on the this project, what's it called? The Solutions Project.
Solutions Project.
I have not heard a single one of these characters speak out and say Fukushima is raging out of control. We must get on it. Honestly, we need these leaders to start talking publicly about the harm that is caused by nuclear. It's not enough for me on a little tiny radio station, and I'm actually going to reach out to these people to see if I can interview with them and ask them these questions directly. But frankly, it seems to be a concerted effort among the alternative energy providers or people that say we're going to provide good, clean energy, and it is really good and really clean. On one hand, on the right hand, the correct path, they're providing us alternatives and solutions, but not one of them wants to come out publicly and say, hey, our lives are being threatened by nuclear pollution as we speak. You know, 68% of tritium in New York City going into the Hudson Bay. That is an outrage that we let Chuck Schumer slam through that. How much money is New York going to be forced to keep open two crippled nuclear power plants?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you in terms of so many of these sort of greenwashing operations, but I let me tell you, the Solutions Project is quite different. I mean, you have people like Leonardo DiCaprio, who is a
there's some big names. I just opened this up. Like there is
Josh Jones, Fox, Mark Ruffalo. Josh Fox, who did the Gasland series, Gasland 1 and 2, in terms of challenging fracking. I mean, these are excellent, excellent people. I'm on the board myself of some organizations. People are looking for other totally solid, good, green organizations that I would recommend. I'm on the board of the group called Beyond Nuclear. Just go to beyondnuclear.org. That's totally solid group. I'm on the board of the Radiation and Public Health Project, and the stress of Radiation and Public Health Project has to do with, you don't need a catastrophic accident for a nuclear plant to emit radioactive poisons. They do it all the time. These are routine emissions, permissible. This is what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission describes these emissions as, permissible emissions. And the Radiation and Public Health Project that I've been associated with for many years has connected these permissible emissions to cancer clusters around every nuclear plant. Go to the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS in Washington, NIRS.org. I was on its board for many a year. Totally solid, totally good.
So where are these?
Always go to Greenpeace. Greenpeace is solid. Now, in terms of what you're talking about, the attempt to greenwash, the attempt to cover up, I will point to my state here in New York State and something that's recently happened along those lines. Here in New York State a few months ago, the governor, Andrew Cuomo, advanced something called a clean energy standard. And some of the less militant environmental groups thought, oh, that sounds great, clean energy standard. They didn't get into it too deeply, clearly, because it turned out that Andrew Cuomo's clean energy standard, which would enable New York State to have half of its energy from renewable sources by 2030, it's 50 by 30 is the slogan. That sounds good, but what Andrew Cuomo has done is include 4 nuclear plants upstate under the listing of clean energy: the Fitzpatrick plant, the Jenna plant, and the Nine Mile Point. There's 2 of them there, Nine Mile plants. 4 nuclear plants, and he claims, Andrew Cuomo, well, we got to keep these old, decrepit nuclear plants upstate New York going because they provide jobs, about 2,000 jobs. Well, Professor Mark Jacobson of the Solutions Project, again, out of Stanford on the West Coast, he's done a wonderful rebuttal and analysis of that claim, and he concludes that, in fact, if New York State would say no to these nuclear plants upstate, what Cuomo accomplished here was to get the New York State Public Service Commission to agree to his claim that these nuclear plants should be kept going, and because they're not economical anymore, to have the taxpayers of New York State commit to a $7.6 billion bailout, $7.6 billion. Well, Professor Jacobson has shown, and you can see his analysis, it's on the internet. In fact, if we would commit to real green, real renewable, real safe and clean power in New York State fully, not partner with nuclear and say that that's green, we could develop 80,000 jobs instead of a couple of thousand jobs, 40 times more. So I think what you're pointing to, some of these organizations that are weak, are not strong, that's a problem. But I think what we all have to do is to gain some knowledge, understand what the good groups are, and obviously not believe the malarkey, the baloney of the nuclear Pinocchios or the Andrew Cuomos who apparently have accepted their baloney, and move ahead. Again, active today, not radioactive tomorrow. That has to still be our motto, and we have to organize, we have to act, we have to move.
You know what, I think actually what we need to say is we're radioactive today, we are radioactive. That's the denial. This is the point. And I actually am going to reach out to this project, and actually I'm going to actually probably put in a grant with this, because I, just to help form with Mimi Gurman, No Nukes Northwest, we're an actual official nonprofit. We got our nonprofit designation, and our goal is to get the Columbia Generating Station shut down, because it is a danger, frankly, not just to the Northwest, but to the entire Northern Hemisphere, because we're only 15 miles from Hanford at the Columbia Generating Station, which means if we had a nuclear meltdown there, which is, you know, they all will at some point. It's not a matter of when. It's a matter of when, not if. If anything happened there, because it's only 15 miles away from Hanford, nobody could get into the Hanford facilities to tend them for at least 2 weeks, which would cause them to explode and bye-bye North America. I mean, it is a clear and present danger what's happening. This is the insanity of the nuclear industry, Carl, that they're sort of like tiptoeing and dancing and hope that they can keep spinning. It reminds me of that guy on the Ed Sullivan Show who had those plates spinning. You know how they would run from this gun and run to that one and then hit this one and get this one?
I remember him.
That's kind of what they remind me of, because they are now it's like what happened with San Onofre, where they wanted to put in the wrong part to save money. I mean, it's an incomprehensible lack of regard for not just human life, all life on our planet. It is just incomprehensible to me that the people running this know they're lying. They know they're lying. They must know they're lying, because the evidence is conclusive, and they all end up with cancer. Like, I you know, their children have problems. Up in Hanford, near Hanford, there's an epidemic of microcephaly, which now we're causing the Zika virus. I mean, it's like you said, that it's like they're trying to baffle them with bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to throw so much at them that you can't point your finger at nuclear, but you can't point your finger away from it. So you have to put all of the poisons into the stew. And that's what we've created on our planet. And that's the struggle that we get. This is the legacy we're handing our children, because we are radioactive today, active tomorrow. We are going to be forced to be active tomorrow if we want to have life on our planet at all.
I begin the book cover up, and just a few sentences let me read. You have not been informed about nuclear power. You have not been told, and that has been done on purpose. Keeping the public in the dark was deemed necessary by the promoters of nuclear power if it was to succeed. Those in government, science, and private industry who have been pushing nuclear power realized that if people were given the facts, if they knew the consequences of nuclear power, they wouldn't stand for it. And I go on. And incidentally, the book, in terms of, the first page, I quote from a very important book, and a chapter in it, I quote from Deuteronomy, "I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse, therefore choose life that you and your descendants may live." And that, I think, is the key issue. Generation after generation in human history have faced, forces of darkness, forces of death, and forces of light. And we just have to fight the forces of darkness. The issue here, is that the scale of destruction is so enormous. Albert Einstein, in his book Out of My Later Years, this is in 1946, he wrote it, after the war and the dropping of the atomic bombs on Japan, he said he never would have lifted pen to paper if he knew, and he's talking about the Nazis not getting the atomic bomb. I mean, they tried, and that's why Einstein in 39 wrote a letter to Franklin Roosevelt, the president, telling him about fission having just been done in Germany, and we'd have to, fight fire with fire and develop nuclear technology before the Nazis did. But the Germans didn't get there. But meanwhile, what occurred was this huge establishment. I've been using the word establishment. What I mean by that is during the war, during the Manhattan Project, places like Hanford, down the road from you. In fact, at Hanford, the first reactors were built to produce plutonium. They didn't know how exactly they'd have enough fuel for nuclear weapons. They would enrich as much uranium as they can get their hands on, because only uranium-235 is fissile and will explode, not uranium-238. And 99.3% of uranium naturally occurring is uranium-238. So then they built Oak Ridge in Tennessee to enrich, so-called enrich, the uranium, get a lot of U-235 in it, so you could get the Hiroshima bomb with 90% U-235, and it worked. But up in Hanford, near where you are, there they built a series of reactors to produce plutonium. Is when there's fission, that U-238 grabs a neutron and transmutes to plutonium-239, which in and of itself is fissile. It'll be usable in a nuclear weapon, and it was used in Nagasaki. And all our atomic bombs, basically, since that time, have been plutonium bombs. Plutonium is the trigger in the hydrogen bomb. But what I want to stress is that it wasn't just the technologies that were developed during the war, but a vested interest. I mean, GE and Westinghouse, previously pointed to, they were big contractors. That's how they got into the nuclear business. During World War II, during the Manhattan Project, our government, the Manhattan Project, secretly contracted Westinghouse and GE to work with the folks at these various national secret laboratories that were set up. The most important, of course, was Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, what's now called Argonne. In any case, by the end of the war, there was this infrastructure. There was huge numbers of people employed. There was have been billions spent in 1940s dollars, and these folks were looking for, well, to continue the vested interest, and they could
right.
They
the
could
cash cow.
They didn't want to go back to teaching physics at the University of Tennessee. They wanted to stay in their nice positions at Los Alamos or Hanford or Oak Ridge, and then there was the other national labs that were created. Lawrence Livermore, Edward Teller, felt that what we need is the hydrogen bomb, and Oppenheimer, the director, scientific director at Los Alamos, he didn't like this. I mean, he tells at one point, Teller, at the end of the war, after the dropping of the bomb, this is Oppenheimer, we physicists have sinned. I mean, he put it on a moral level, but Teller didn't know from sin, and ultimately he split from Oppenheimer. In fact, he testifies against, he becomes a real, aggressive foe of Oppenheimer. But in any case, they give him the government, his own national laboratory, Lawrence Livermore, which incidentally both Lawrence Livermore and Los Alamos are still run by the University of California. You were mentioning before academia be kind of being
yes.
pulled into the establishment. That has happened too. In any case, they were looking for things to do with nuclear. We could build more nuclear weapons, and ultimately 30,000 atomic bombs and hydrogen bombs were built. But what else could we do with nuclear technology to perpetuate this endeavor? And there comes nuclear-powered airplanes, nuclear-powered rockets, food irradiation, nuclear power plants. Actually, the concept of a nuclear power plant was based on those plutonium production reactors at Hanford. There was so much heat involved in doing the fission, having the uranium-238 pick up neutrons, become plutonium-239, and so forth. So much heat involved that the early documentation, and I've written a lot about this, talks about dual-purpose reactors. Reactors like the ones at Hanford, which would produce plutonium, and as a side product, produce electricity. A major national laboratory, which was a national nuclear laboratory, also established by the Atomic Energy Commission, which in 1946 the Manhattan Project was turned into. The Atomic Energy Commission was right here where I live on Long Island, called Brookhaven National Laboratory.
Let me stop you there a minute, Carl. You're telling me the Manhattan Project was turned into the AEC, which is now the NRC?
Well, yes. The Manhattan Project, which was the secret thing during the war, became in 1946.
The people of St. Louis are still suffering from that. There is
from Manhattan Project waste. The Atomic Energy Commission, and then in 1974, the Atomic Energy Commission was disbanded by Congress. This was amazing, considering how the U.S. Congress, they've been handmaidens of the nuclear industry for so many years, and nuclear establishment. And in 1974, then the nuclear the problem with the Atomic Energy Commission, as Congress finally acknowledged, was that it was set up to both promote and regulate nuclear technology.
Right.
And that was a conflict of interest. So they created a Nuclear Regulatory Commission to do the regulation, and then took a few years a Department of Energy to do the promotional role. Nevertheless, both the NRC and the DOE equally cheerleaders for nuclear technology. The NRC, like the AEC, never denied a construction or operating license for any nuclear power plant anywhere, anytime. And just if I could jump back quick to Einstein, out of my later years, he not only writes, I wouldn't have signed that letter, I wouldn't send Senator Roosevelt if I knew the Germans wouldn't have gotten the bomb, but he talks about humanity and destruction, and how through time, Einstein writes, people have been led in the wrong direction. But, he goes on, when you talk about nuclear technology, the scale of destruction is so much greater than humanity has ever seen.
Ever.
I think the whole thing kind of is summed up by Admiral Hyman Rickover. He is regarded as the father of the nuclear navy. He, in fact, was in charge of construction of the first nuclear plant built in the U.S., Shippingport in Pennsylvania, big nuclear promoter, big push future of nuclear, and then finally he saw the light. And in 1982, when he, and this is in Cover Up, what you're not supposed to know about nuclear power, his speech to a committee of Congress when he retires from the Navy, and what he says was a few billion years ago, there was so much naturally occurring radioactivity on this planet that life could not exist. And only after those poisons, the cesium and the strontium and all these horrible poisons, went through their half-lives and went through their hazardous lifetimes, could life begin on Earth. Now, he says, this is Rickover, not Greenpeace or Beyond Nuclear or the Solutions Project. This is this guy who was this great nuclear promoter. By having these nuclear power plants, by having these nuclear reactors, we are creating the very poisons that precluded life on Earth. And there, Rickover goes on, I think the human race is going to wreck itself, and we have to shut all these things down. We got to close them down. We got to outlaw nuclear reactors. And Rickover had it all right. The only addition I would say is you can't be anthropomorphic here. It's not only humanity, people who are suffering and will suffer from nuclear technology, it's other forms of life. I mean, they say cockroaches can absorb 200 times the radioactivity that people can. But I don't think that we should allow cockroaches to inherit the Earth. I think what we have to do is just what Rickover said in 82. Shut them down, and shut them down now, right
and
now.
Make it illegal.
And as I stress, no need for any of them.
No. You know, the World Nuclear Association actually formed in 1975, and they were funded. They call themselves a .org, but they're not. I've done some little bit of history looking into it the last couple of days. They're actually a private consortium of nuclear promoters and nuclear companies that their mission statement is to get to international influencers and give them informative documentation about the benefits of nuclear industry. Which means they hire paid nuclear. This is why I am going to start using Agneta Rising's name, and I've decided, like in St. Louis, Don Slater is the CEO of Republic Services, right? Slager. And I am going to follow the advice of Dr. John Goffman. Don't call these companies like General Electric. We need to find the names of the people in charge, because they need to be publicly humiliated, because they are destroying the planet. Literally, as you just said, they are literally and they're hiding behind these names of the corporation, but the corporations are not. They are the people behind them. They're not just the corporation. I mean, as much as they want to say corporations are people, they're not. The human beings behind them are the people making the decisions. And we're really at a critical phase in this whole issue. And
we've been critical for so long. Well, I mean, yes. I had the honor to know John Goffman, Dr. John Goffman.
Wow.
And for listeners who aren't familiar with him, he actually was involved with the Manhattan Project. He was involved with
the discovery of
various isotopes, and he went on to become associate director at Lawrence Livermore. And then as the years went by, he realized, like Rickover, what he was involved with. In fact, an interview I did with Dr. Goffman a few years before he died, he speaks about his among the epiphanies was, believe it or not, the U.S. was planning to build, to perpetuate the nuclear establishment. One of the ways, the Panatomic Canal. In fact, in my book, Cover Up, you will see Atomic Energy Commission graphs and descriptions of how what they would do would be put scores and scores of nuclear devices across the Isthmus of Panama and set them off. And so it wouldn't be like digging a canal. You'd have all these nuclear devices exploding and creating the basis for the Panatomic Canal, it was called. In fact, Congress supported this project and so forth, and Dr. Goffman went down to this area, he told me, to the people were quite upset, as you could imagine, with the prospects of all these nuclear devices going off where they lived. I mean, the fallout would be enormous. And Goffman, he was on assignment for the Atomic Energy Commission, totally sympathized, and he began to understand fully the horrors of nuclear technology. One of his greatest books, everybody should read it, is Poison Power,
yes.
A great book which he wrote with Arthur Tamplin, who also worked at Lawrence Livermore. A giant among the folks who were in the nuclear establishment, but people of conscience. And also, it's important to note that Dr. Goffman was not just a PhD, he also was an MD. He also was a medical doctor committed to the lives of people. And when he realized that on the other side of things, he was involved in a establishment which was into the deaths of people, and was, just like you were talking about, denying that, saying it's not happening, it won't happen, it can't happen, just
the
to...
The nuclear priesthood, as Dr. Alvin Weinberg said, they call themselves the nuclear priesthood.
Weinberg, to Alvin Weinberg, who did not leave the nuclear industry, he was the director at Oak Ridge National Laboratory for many years, and I heard him with my own ears at Brookhaven National Laboratory, which is set up by the Atomic Energy Commission here on Long Island in 1947, specifically developed civilian uses of nuclear technology. I remember him addressing scientists. I kind of snuck into his address at Brookhaven National Laboratory, and there several hundred nuclear scientists at that laboratory smiled as he talked about how there was a mistake, he argued, using uranium in nuclear power plants. We should have gone right to plutonium because it would be easier to create as a fuel, but it's terribly toxic. I mean, plutonium has been described as the most toxic radioactive substance, period. So it would be problematic to use plutonium as the major energy source. But then he looks out into the group and he says, but we, the atomic priesthood, could manage all this. I mean, what madness, what...
Yes.
Absolute craziness. And just let me add, though, on a positive note, there were originally, through the years, three nuclear reactors at Brookhaven National Laboratory spreading cancer here on where I live on Long Island. Tritium, Long Island is dependent on a sole source aquifer, the water underneath our feet. Tritium was leaking for decades from reactors at Brookhaven National Laboratory. But finally, the people of Long Island got together from the grassroots to notable people. Alec Baldwin, the actor Alec Baldwin, very active in this effort. Christie Brinkley was a key to this effort. And people fought nuclear operations at, again, what was to be the big national laboratory to do... civilian nuclear power, and all those reactors at Brookhaven National Laboratory are now shut down. They're closed. In fact, there's nothing nuclear here on Long Island, period. It's a nuclear-free zone. Why? Because of people acting and moving. Now, the bad news is that what the Department of Energy did with the end of the nuclear operations at Brookhaven National Laboratory was to create a new national laboratory out in Idaho. Out in Idaho, there was they used to call it Argonne West. Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois had this operation in Idaho, and also the Naval Reactor Testing Station in Idaho. So after the thing happened at Brookhaven Lab, the enormous protest and revolution
just moved it
really...
They just moved it to the Midwest.
Well, which is very common. In fact,
yeah.
I've written a lot about this.
I have to cut us off. We have 30 seconds. I just looked at the clock. This has been extremely compelling. Look, I want to thank you. Our guest has been Carl Grossman. He is a professor. He has his own carlgrossman.com. You can read all about it. Please go to his website, download his book, and read his book. Thank you, Carl. I hope you'll join us again.
I joined us again, and the last time I was in Eugene, I gave a talk at the university on nuclear power. Love to do it again.
Time to see you. Thank you so much. Put your courage sheet on, everybody. Thanks, Carl.
Adventures on the Tracks you can catch every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in UCY.